Welcome to Well Versed, where we bring biblical principles of governance to governmental leaders and you. This is the Well Versed podcast.
Well, we welcome you to this special edition of the Well Versed podcast. For this one, we're going all the way to Israel to our good friend Josh Reinstein, and we are going to get a report about his brand new book, and I mean really brand new, and it's already had incredible results from its first day of being offered. Josh, welcome from Jerusalem. It's good to have you on with us.
Ah, great to be on the show. Great to see both of you.
And Josh, I knew almost all the podcast alone, but every once in a while I could talk my wife into it. And she went walking by. She's been out exercising. I said, whoa, stop. I've got Josh on the phone from Israel. You'll want to be involved. So I recruited Rosemary to help me. So Rosemary, bring greetings to Josh.
Josh, we're so honored that you're here with us and that you can help lead and guide us and advise us, especially concerning Israel and Jerusalem. We know that everything is focused on what is taking place right now in your homeland, and we are here ready, willing, and able to prevail in prayer for God's purposes concerning Israel and Jerusalem.
Josh, you're going to lay out some real steps of significant steps of activism, and why you're an Orthodox Jew. And just so all those listening, Josh is an Orthodox Jew, but he works very closely with Christians, including us. We're very close friends. And he's got some pretty strong counsel for us, I think, in the new book he has just written. So evangelical Christians, I want you to listen to what an Orthodox Jew is teaching us about where we are as a nation, teaching us from Israel. So, Josh, just a little bit about your life. How long have you lived in Israel? You weren't born there, correct?
No, of course. First of all, Jim, Rosemary, thanks for that warm introduction. It's great to see both of you, and you guys are such champions of Israel. It's an honor to be on the show. I was actually born in Toronto, Canada, but when I was a year and a half old, I moved to Dallas, Texas, and I grew up in Dallas. And I made Aliyah. I moved to Israel in 1999. So I was already 22 years old when I came to Israel. And I've been here ever since. I started with my military service, and then I got involved in politics and marketing and things of that effect. And today I'm the director of the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus and president of the Israel Allies Foundation.
The Knesset Christian Allies Caucus. I want people to know what that is. That's a big deal, what you lead there. The Knesset. Tell them what the Knesset is first, in case somebody doesn't know. What's the Knesset? But then the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus. What does that mean?
So the Knesset is our parliament. And in 2004, a member of parliament named Yuri Stern, Alav Shalom, and I decided to launch something called the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus. The idea was to build direct lines of communication and cooperation with Christian leaders around the world. We realized, and this is, again, during the Second Intifada, the second Arab uprising here in the land of Israel, that it was Christians, not countries, that were standing with Israel. And we started asking ourselves, why? You know, why are these Christians standing with Israel when no one else will? And we realized that if you had an economic agenda, you're not necessarily going to stand with Israel. We don't have the oil wealth of our neighbors. And if you had a political agenda, you're definitely not going to stand with Israel. We have one vote in the UN compared to 22 Arab votes, many more Muslim votes. It's only people who put values and beliefs ahead of economic and political concerns that will stand with Israel. That leaves what they call people of the book, both Jews and Christians who believe in the Bible. And when we realized that, we realized we had a duty to the citizens of Israel to start developing this new relationship between Jews and Christians in the 21st century. And we did that by launching the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus. And today, we're the largest caucus in the Knesset. We're made up of 19 members of Knesset from 7 political parties, left to right, religious to secular. And we run what we call faith-based diplomacy. That's people taking their biblical support for Israel and turning into real political action.
19 members of the Knesset that are a part of this caucus. There's 120 members of the Knesset, I believe, total.
There's 120 members of the Knesset, but that includes the ministers, the speaker, the prime minister himself, and those people are not allowed to sit in caucuses. So it's 19 members out of about 80 possible members that could sit in a caucus.
Okay.
And that's why we're so large and influential within our parliament.
Yeah, you're virtually 25% Those that are that's quite remarkable. Now the we think of 19 members of the Knesset or the Israeli Parliament, but you also are connected with how many countries in the world where you have direct connection with members of Parliament or members of Congress in that particular nation?
Well, it's interesting. In 2006, during the second Lebanon War, the Congress, the House of Representatives, wanted to show that they're standing with Israel. So they launched our first sister caucus called the Congressional Israelites Caucus. It's the only bipartisan caucus that has Republicans and Democrats in it that stands with Israel. We have over 70 members today. But when that launched, a lot of countries said, hey, we want sister caucuses too. So it was kind of like a domino effect. We started caucuses all over the world. Today, we have 43 caucuses in countries all over the world, and we're about to launch our 44th one next week, which is about 1,000 members of parliament around the world that are involved in what we call faith-based diplomacy. They take their biblical support for Israel and turn it to real political action.
That is encouraging. That is tremendous. We've had the privilege of sitting on some of those meetings at various places with members of Congress who or their parliaments who stand with you. That is absolutely awesome. We're going to jump right now into your book, the title of your book, and hold it up so people can see it for those who are watching. Most people are just listening on a podcast, but some are watching on video. So what's the title of the book?
It's Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel, The Power of Faith-Based Diplomacy. And if you see if you are watching, you could see the Arch of Titus here, and then the symbol of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem on the Arch of Titus, and in the backdrop, the Western Wall. So it's Titus, Trump, and the Triumph of Israel. And so it's actually an interesting concept. It pretty much sums up the last 16 years of work that I've done from starting the Christianized Caucus and being the president of the Israelized Foundation that coordinates all of our sister caucuses. But really the idea is twofold. Number one, that if you don't look at Israel through a biblical lens, then you miss the story. So I take the example of Titus, and for those of you who don't know who Titus is, Titus was the general, the Roman general, that destroyed the Second Temple. And when he did so, he declared his victory over the God of Israel. I mean, he was done. He thought he won. He beat the God of Israel. Paganism won out. And in fact, he was so excited about this that he did one of the biggest infrastructure projects in Roman history. He built the Arch of Titus. Now, today there's a lot of arches of war that you can see, the Arch de Triomphe in Paris, and you know, arches all over Europe that symbolize the victory of war. But this was the first one ever. And it depicted the Roman generals and the military carrying out the menorah and all the things from the Second Temple and their victory over the God of Israel. Now, people of faith at the time realized that they didn't beat Israel. They knew the prophecies of Israel. They knew that the people of Israel would be kicked out of the land of Israel. But one day, they were going to be gathered back and brought back to the same location. And that actually, the destruction of the Second Temple was the beginning of the fulfillment of prophecy. But if you don't look at it from a biblical point of view, you could make the same mistake as Titus and think, yeah, that's the end of the Jewish people. The same is today. If you look at Israel just from a political point of view, you miss the whole story. But if you look at it through the eyes and the lens of the Bible, it becomes very clear. And because Bible-believing Christians do that, we're seeing that they are getting involved with the fulfillment of biblical prophecy and bringing about incredible results. And I used a test case of the Trump administration to show how that actually works.
Okay, that you've got us on our way in understanding the first part of it, Titus, Trump, and the Triumph of Israel. But take us from Titus to Trump. By the way, the year of the destruction of the temple was?
Oh, are you asking me the year?
Yes, I am asking.
70 AD.
And the reason I ask you that is because now we got to jump from 70 AD somehow to 2020. So it's Titus, Trump, and the Triumph of Israel. Walk us further in the book.
All right. So then I go through basically the history of the Jewish people, the idea of anti-Semitism, where that comes from. I also go into the history of the state of Israel. I talk about the legal rights and the archaeological rights and the political rights of the land of Israel, but all of them pale in comparison to the biblical right. And now we're in 2020, and we have now all over the world Bible-believing Christians getting involved in what we call faith-based diplomacy, and incredible things start happening. We see the embassy move to Jerusalem. We see anti-BDS legislation in the United States of America. We see recognition of the Golan Heights. And I'll tell you a funny story. As president of the Israel Allies Foundation in 2015, we made a list of the top 10 things that America could do for Israel. In our wildest imagination, 10 things, big ones, that we as an organization would like to see happen. And our goal was in the next 10 years, get one of them done. That we would get one of them to happen. Donald Trump and the Trump administration in the last 3.5 years has done 9 of them. Okay, and that is the power of faith-based diplomacy. When Christians actually get involved, when they don't just pray about it, but they turn their prayer into real action, incredible things happen. And it's because they see Israel through that biblical lens. And that's really what the story is. And that's what the triumph of Israel is all about. When people of good faith who believe in the Bible get involved and turn it into real political action, then you see the triumph of Israel. And we just witnessed it this week. We saw the peace accords with the United Arab Emirates. I mean, that's an example of the Netanyahu-Trump doctrine of peace through strength. These years of us capitulating and releasing terrorists with blood on their hands and trading land for peace, that all is a sin thing of the past. Now it's peace for peace. And that's because we're looking at it through a biblical point of view. And one of the things that I go through is not only did Trump do these things, not only did President Trump actually do these incredible things, and I go through the list, but every time he did it, they said there was going to be World War III, blood in the streets, intifada, terror. You know, they said you can't move the embassy to Jerusalem. Every Arab country will go up in flames. But yet, when he did what was biblically correct and not politically correct, we see peace. We see tranquility. We see actually Arab nations making peace for the first time with Israel in 25 years. So no one understands why these moves are bringing peace closer together. But people who believe in the Bible understand why, because when you go according to God's roadmap, good things happen.
Are you able to name some of the, you mentioned 9 out of 10 things that Trump did. You mentioned moving of the embassy in Golan Heights. Can you mention more of them?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a whole chapter dedicated to just those 9 things explaining how big they are. And what's interesting is he did so many of them so fast that some of them kind of fell through the cracks. But I'll give you a few more. The scrapping of the horrible JCPOA agreement with Iran. I mean, that was a devastating agreement that guaranteed Iran would get nuclear weapons within 10 years, destabilized the Middle East, caused incredible strife and lots of bloodshed because of it. And he scrapped it. He snapped back sanctions. And he stopped that. That's a massive victory for people who really believe in real peace and in real justice here in the Middle East. Another extremely incredible one was the Taylor Force Act. You know that America was actually paying the salary of terrorists who were killing Americans. So Palestinian terrorists would kill an American, and then they would get salary for life from the Palestinian Authority. But it was America that was paying for that, not just when they kill Israeli citizens, but also American citizens. So they passed a law saying American money cannot be used to pay terrorist salaries. Now, that seems common sense, but everyone said if you did that, again, explosion in the streets, the PA would collapse, nothing to do. Defunding UNRWA, the UN organization that is dedicated only to the Palestinian refugee issue, is perpetuating the refugee crisis. So just to give you a background of it, in the UN, there's 2 UN refugee organizations. There's one for Palestinians called UNRWA, and there's one called UNHCR, which is for every other refugee in the world. Syrian refugees, you know, Sudanese refugees, any refugee is under UNHCR. Well, the budget for UNRWA is 4 times that as UNHCR, because their whole mandate is just to perpetuate the refugee issue. So you're not a refugee for one generation, which is the definition of refugee. You're for 5 generations to refugees. So if you look at the Palestinian refugee, there should be only about 30,000 left from the time of 1948. But according to UNRWA, there's 5 million of them. And they have schools where they teach them terror, and they hide rockets in the schools to shoot on Israel. I mean, it's a terrible organization. Said if you defund them, if you touch them, explosions, terror in the streets, and so on and so on. And so what we're seeing now is that all these things that have been, you know, things that people worked on for decades, have been done one after another by the Trump administration because they realize that their base are Bible-believing Christians, and this is what they want to happen. And now they're starting to realize that when you follow a biblical prescription to the problems, not a political one, you actually bring peace closer together. So everyone scoffed at the Trump administration when they moved the embassy to Jerusalem and said, no, this brings peace closer because it takes Jerusalem off the table. Why keep pretending that Israel's going to give away Jerusalem? They're not going to. And yet now, when we see real peace with the United Arab Emirates, peace through strength, we see that it did actually bring peace closer together. So now people are just trying to ignore what happened, but the proof is in the pudding.
Let's make sure our listeners understand when you use the phrase, it takes Jerusalem off the table. That gets said often. Define what that phrase means.
Well, you know, what they're trying to say is that Israel one day would divide Jerusalem, okay, and that they would give Jerusalem to the Palestinians, or half of it, or part of it. Now, all of us who know Israel, that Jerusalem is their undivided capital, know that that's never going to happen. We're never giving Jerusalem as any part of it to a Palestinian state, or dividing in any way. So having this issue of Jerusalem always come up when negotiation for peace happens was just kind of like a thorn in the side. It always just killed the debate and the talks because we're never going to give it up. And so when they took it off the table and said, no, Jerusalem is the undivided capital of Israel, and moved their embassy to Jerusalem, that was the end of the issue. And then we were able to move forward with other issues. And then people saw that the Palestinians were being very unreasonable in their demands. So they got left behind. And now we're seeing peace with a lot of different countries. And United Arab Emirates is the first one to normalize with peace for peace with Israel. But there will be more. I think the next one will happen the next 2-3 weeks with Sudan. And maybe Oman is coming up after that. So we're seeing a new movement. Every day something's happening in the Middle East. Today, Saudi Arabia announced that we can fly over their airspace. I mean, this is a major breakthrough. And yet, these are the results of the Trump doctrine of strengthening Israel. And you have to understand that Donald Trump has really been a champion of Israel. And he's come out and he said, look, the solution to the problems in the Middle East is not Iran, like the Obama administration said. The solution is Israel. It's the only free democracy in the Middle East. And if we strengthen that free democracy, then other countries will come alongside it. And everyone said he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's not going to happen. And he proved them all wrong.
By the way, going back to that phrase, Jerusalem off the table for just a moment. For those who are listening, we always speak of Jerusalem as the indivisible and eternal capital of Israel. I urge you to use that language when you're talking to people. Indivisible, can't be divided, and eternal capital of Israel. Josh, people will be listening to this for some time, well past the election. But right now we are before the election. I would like you to talk, what do you want to say, in particularly to Christian evangelicals across America, as we're approaching this 2020 election, Donald Trump versus Joe Biden?
Well, I think, first of all, for people of faith, they have to understand that it's not enough just to pray about something. You can't stay home and just pray about it and say, look, we're going to pray about it and we'll see what happens. You have to get involved. You have to do something. When people of faith get involved with political discourse, then good things happen. All right. There's a famous joke of the Jewish rabbi who prayed his whole life to win the lottery. And he was the best rabbi and he followed every good deed you could imagine. And he prayed every night, just let me win the lottery, let me win the lottery. And when he died, he saw God and he said, why, after living such a pious life and doing everything that you asked of me, did you not let me win the lottery? And God says to him, you never bought a ticket. And that's the key. If you don't buy the ticket, you can't win the lottery. It doesn't matter how much you pray about it. So if you don't go out and vote, then you can't complain about it later. You have to vote. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is people of faith in America, their voter turnout rate is abysmal. I mean, it's like 40%. I think that I was talking to some pastors, the registration rate, just registering to vote, and not everyone who registers to vote actually votes, is also abysmal. So what we're seeing is that we have a lot of people who have a lot of strong opinions on this election coming up. And they're not planning to go out and vote. And that is just crazy. You have to vote. And if you don't vote, you don't have a right to say one way or another. Now, if Israel is close to your heart, I think the vote is clear. And I don't have to say who to vote for. I think if you actually go out and vote and you care about Israel, then I think it's clear. I don't think people want to go back to the Obama doctrine. I don't think people want to go back to, you know, land for peace and releasing thousands of terrorists with their with blood on their hands for goodwill gestures and being sanctioned by the UN. I mean, if Israel's close to your heart, then I think that it's very obvious that the best candidate for Israel is Donald Trump. And I'm not saying that I'm Israeli. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. We have Democrats and Republicans in our caucus. But you can't say otherwise that Donald Trump is not the best president for Israel. He's the best president for Israel of all the presidents in the history of America. And there's a long list of very pro-Israel presidents in America. I mean, great one. Ronald Reagan, for example. Unbelievable. So you have to go out and you have to vote. And I think that when you make your decision who to vote for, if Israel's of consequence, I think it's very clear. But even whoever you vote for, you got to go out and vote. Otherwise, you don't really have a say in what happens. And that's the power of faith-based diplomacy. If Christians didn't get involved with issues like moving the embassy to Jerusalem or scrapping the Iran deal or recognizing sovereignty in Golan Heights, then it would not have happened. That's what happened.
Keep talking to us, because there are pastors who kind of blow off certain issues and say, well, it doesn't matter. You can, we have Democrats, we have Republicans, we have independent. Okay, fair enough. You do in the church. But they, as a certain issues aren't that important. They really don't matter. I want you to talk directly to the pastor right now who may be listening, or talk to that parishioner, that church attender, that Christian evangelical layperson who's listening to this podcast right now. What would you say? What would be the plea from your heart as a citizen of Israel to those who are saying, well, it just really doesn't matter that much?
Look, I think that evil is allowed to prevail when good people do nothing. And that's what history has taught us. I also think the farther back you can look, the further ahead you can see. And that's a direct quote from Winston Churchill, and it makes a lot of sense today. People need to understand what these riots that we're seeing on the streets are all about. You know, it's funny, not funny, but it's interesting that in my book, which was written before the coronavirus, okay, and in the Titus Triumphant and the Triumph of Israel, I talk about a time where there are going to be burning Bibles in the streets in America.
Okay, stop right there. Expand on what you're saying right now, because you said to me once, and maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, perhaps, you said to me, Jim, you know where America is right now. I said, what do you mean? American evangelicals in America right now are where the Jews were in Europe in the late 1930s. That's what you said.
Well, it's not just in America, it's in the world. I mean, you have to understand that there is a genocide being carried out against not just evangelicals, Christians. You know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of Christians are being murdered in Africa, in Indonesia, in the Middle East, just for being Christians. We saw over 100,000 Christians murdered just in Syria, 2.5 hours drive from my house here in Jerusalem, just for being Christian. You know, you had three options. You could convert to Islam, you could pay 13 ounces gold protection money, or you could be beheaded. That was what was going on in the civil war in Syria, right down the street. So this isn't like a theoretical thing. But what I'm saying now is that in my book, I talk about a time when Bibles will be burned, when churches will be blown up, when synagogues will be blown up in America in the future, because what we're witnessing is a clash of civilizations. It's people who believe in the God of Israel and the Bible on one side, and people who not just don't believe in it, people who are against the God of Israel and the Bible on the other side. When they talk about destroying the history of America, when they're talking about bringing down the foundations and revitalizing what is the history and the foundations and the founding fathers of America, and I go this over into this in the book, they're talking about pulling Judeo-Christian values out of America. That's what this is about. And you have to understand that, why is America and Israel such good friends, Jim? Why does America say this little country the size of El Salvador is our greatest ally? You know, this is our best friend in the world. It's not Japan, it's not Britain, it's not France, not Germany, it's not Brazil, it's Israel. Why? It's because we're the only two countries founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And because of that, we have a natural alliance. What we're seeing right now in the streets is an attempt to undermine those principles. And I go into not just who's standing with Israel in the book, who's standing against Israel and why. And so people of faith who, you know, are saying, you know, we don't have to do anything. And, you know, this is, some people are for this, some people that, they don't understand that their faith is under attack. And they take for granted that they've lived in America for so long and they can believe in whatever they want. They can say whatever they want. But those things change and they change fast. And we saw this not too long ago in Germany in the 1930s, that there were also riots and people who of good faith who wanted to speak up. They were quiet. They didn't say anything because they didn't want to be harassed. They didn't want to be yelled at. They didn't want to be beaten up. And so when people of good faith are scared to speak up and say the truth, that's when dangerous things happen. And we're getting a little taste of that in America today, but we're really at the fork of in the road of history. America's at a turning point. They have to decide which way are they gonna go. Now, of course, and I believe in the Bible, just like you, Jim and Rosemary, our past and our present, our future have been foretold. We know that there is going to be peace in Jerusalem and we're comforted by that. But in life, we've always had a choice. We could do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. Now, the Jewish people have unfortunately always chosen the hard way. But I think we have a great opportunity now to understand the power of when you go through the Bible and you open the newspaper and you understand that what God is doing today, as long as you mesh those two, we have incredible success. And if you understand that and get involved with that, then big things happen. And we've seen that over the last 3.5 years. Israel for the first time is strong and independent and not worried about being isolated by other countries. We're emboldened by having more peace and success with other countries around here.
When you say the easy way or the hard way, and the Jews have chosen the hard way, expand on that just a minute. What are you referring to? What do you mean by those two phrases?
It goes back to the exile of the Jewish people. We've, for the last 2,000 years, have been, you know, kicked around from country to country. We've been victims of pogroms. We've been victims of the Crusade, of the Inquisition, of the Holocaust. We've always, you know, really had to live by other people's lead. And for the first time, now that God has brought us back to the land of Israel, we have our own country, our own army, our own military, but we've made mistakes along the way. I mean, we've bought into this false idea of peace through strength, of land for peace, of a two-state solution in our own land, of disengaging our communities from their own biblical heritage land, of and even entertaining the idea of dividing Jerusalem. All these things were very detrimental mistakes. And we have to understand that since 1911, the Jewish people have divided the land of Israel 22 times. And it's only led to death and destruction. And for the first time, we're starting to understand, wait a minute, there's another way. Well, we've been sold this idea that we have to do it because we're small and we're weak. No, it's not true. If we stand strong, if we stand by God's commitment and his covenant with the Jewish people, then important things can happen. And what we're starting to understand for the first time is that we're also not alone. There are Bible-believing Christians all over the world. As you mentioned, we have 43 Israelized caucuses and countries around the world that are bolstered by communities of Bible-believing Christians that are saying, we stand beside you. And so I think that we're in a new era. I think we're in an incredible era. And if we continue in this era, big things are going to happen. And I believe we will.
I'm going to give Josh an opportunity to cap this off and close one final appeal. This has been really profound. I wish everybody in the world could hear what you're saying. Rosemary, what do you want to ask or comment or add to what Josh has said before I let him do a sort of a finale?
Well, in this time, we're not able to come to Israel. How can we assist?
Because of COVID.
Yeah, so we've had to postpone our tours and so forth. But how can we support and be a blessing to Israel and the Jewish people during this season? Do you recommend as an alternative to show our support? We're praying, of course, but we want to do something practical. We want to put action and put facts on the ground to our intercession.
Well, thank you, Rosemary. It's a great question. I go into it in the book, Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel, quite detailed. What is the plan forward? But I can say in small detail, there's a lot of things that can be done, even if you can't come here physically. One of them is praying for the peace of Jerusalem. You know, I mentioned that you can't only pray, but prayer works. Prayer is important, but you have to add action to that. So the first thing you can do is you can pray. You can pray for the people of Israel. You can pray for the leaders of Israel. You can pray for to the God of Israel that he'd show mercy, especially in this time of COVID and Corona, and that the borders will open and that we can be together again. I'm nervous about a Feast of Tabernacles without seeing the two of you in Jerusalem. That I haven't seen that for a long time. But secondly, I think that people need to get involved. First of all, I think people need to go out and vote. You know, there's a big election coming up, very important. People need to come out and vote. Number two, I think people need to educate themselves. And, you know, one way is to buy my book and to learn about faith of diplomacy, how you get involved, stuff like that. But there's other ways too. You can go online and learn about Israel, see the truth of Israel, you know, find out what's really going on in Israel. Another thing that's going on is we're seeing incredible anti-Semitism. I mean, it's sickening from over here to see in LA people really walking through the streets yelling death to the Jews. I know that there's going to be rallies to stand with the Jewish community. I think Christians need to show up to these rallies. I think they need to be there and say, look, you're not alone this time. We know what's going on. But I also think Jews need to strengthen the Christian community too. We see a lot of churches being, you know, set on fire. We're seeing Bibles being burned in the streets. I think this is a real call for unity. So I think Jews and Christians who do believe in the Bible need to stand together and show support for one another. But also I think it's important to call out what is good and what is evil. You know, there's a passage in the Bible that say, woe unto those who see good for evil, evil for good, light for dark, and dark for lightness. And unfortunately, that's what we're witnessing today. We're seeing a lot of people who are not bad people. They're not people who have bad intent in any way. But when they see something good, they actually see it as evil. And when they see something evil, they see it as good. They see dark for light and light for dark, sweet for bitter, bitter for sweet. So people who understand what's going on, they have to speak up. And I know that a lot of pastors and a lot of people are saying, look, we're going to keep our heads down. It's a time to reconciliation. Let's try to see what I don't think that's the time now. I think that people who understand what's going on need to speak up, speak loud, let people understand that this is really a battle between good and evil right now. And that if you just need a little bit of light in the darkness to get the real message out, you know, and that the fact that you need to explain to people that Israel is what's good in the Middle East, not Iran. The crazy dictatorship of Iran run by ayatollahs who treat their women like dogs and who behead people in the streets and have no freedoms, that you have to explain which one of us is the good guys. There's a big problem. And I think that one of the things that people can do is get Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel and just learn the issues and be prepared to speak out these issues.
We're going to talk about your book again, how they can order that, and give that title one more time, and even your website. So we haven't covered that yet, but you referenced the burning of synagogues. It wasn't covered here in the media hardly at all, but at Shavuot in Los Angeles, they torched a number of synagogues. It's done by BLM, Black Lives Matter, which is by their founders, is pro-Marxist, homosexual affirming, trans affirming, anti-nuclear family. These are their words from their 13 core values. And also they come from a cultic religion in Nigeria. The result is that they are also anti-Semitic. They acknowledge they made trips to Israel. They formed bonds and friendships with Israel's enemies and came back and declared themselves such. So it is under reporting the BLM's attack upon these synagogues that occurred at that time. I suspect there's more than that I don't know about, but those are some that I'm aware of that is happening. Of course, they've also declared that they want to burn the churches, and they've also taken Bibles, wrapped them into flags, and set them aflame. So that's what we're dealing with here on the streets of this organization. I want you to say a word, if you would, about your website. What's your website, and then how do they get the book? And as an author, because we're used to saying our titles of our books we write so often, say it slower, because I want people, when you say Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel, they're not going to get it. So say it a whole lot slower, because I want people to get the title of the book and to know where to go, where they can get the book, and then whatever website information you want to give as well.
Well, thank you, Jim. Yeah, look, you know, you can call it Black Lives Matters or Antifa or anything, but the truth is that anti-Semitism is a virus. It spreads like a wildfire. Yep. There's no, you know, reason for it. There's no rhyme for it. It's rejection of God and what God's doing on earth. And so this takes many different forms and in many different phases, and it just needs to be called out. The book is, if you go to Amazon and you write Titus Trump, it will pop up. So you don't need to know the whole name. It's Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel. But you can also go to our landing page, is triumphofisrael.com. If you go to triumphofisrael.com, it's a landing page, and then you just click the button, it'll take you to Amazon, and then you'll see Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel. And there's a soft copy, there's a hard copy, there's a Kindle copy. You know, today we sold out actually on Amazon, which is great, but you can still order, and by tomorrow they'll have more books and they'll be able to send it out. It's really great that people are actually taking time to read it. And I just would say that before the election, it's important to get on there, get the book, send it to friends, get this information out, because people need to be armed with the truth. And so the best way to is either go to triumphofisrael.com or just go to Amazon and write Titus Trump, and then the Triumph of Israel will pop up. So it's Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel.
Do I dare ask this question? What would a Biden presidency mean to Israel? In other words, we have Kamala Harris, we have Nancy Pelosi, we have Chuck Schumer, you get the picture. What would a Biden, if I can put you on the spot, and you can pass this question if you don't want to answer it, what would a Biden presidency mean to Israel?
Look, it really depends on the policies he's going to follow, what it would mean. But right away, what it means is two-state solution. It means,
what does that, for our listener, what is the two-state solution? What does that actually mean?
It means pressure on Israel to divide Jerusalem, to give up their homeland to the Palestinians. It means for sure bigger scrutiny in international organizations like the UN, where they're allowed to, you know, we don't have an automatic veto on anti-Israel resolutions. It would mean immediately, and probably the most dangerous of all, the resumption of the deal with Iran that will allow them to get nuclear weapons. So, I mean, some people have these doomsday scenarios of this is the worst case scenario and this is the best case. Just those three things that I said, which is part of the Democratic platform for Israel and what Joe Biden is saying he's going to do, they're all terrible for Israel, in my opinion. Obviously, there are people who really like the idea of splitting the land of Israel and creating a Palestinian state. There's people who do believe that Iran is a peaceful country somehow. I don't know how they believe that, and they should have nuclear weapons. And there's people who support the UN. But those are things that are going to happen for sure if Biden wins, and I'm very concerned about it. I don't want to go back to the days of the pressure of Israel and the dividing of the land. And, you know, the talk that went about with rockets, that when we respond, that we're over-responding. I mean, those days should be over. I think that the Trump administration, through the Netanyahu doctrine, the Trump doctrine has proven that only the strong survive in the Middle East. And that when we're strong, we can get everything. And when we're weak, we get nothing. And so being weak again is not an option in my book. And that's something that, I know the Biden administration will go back to the same failed policies that we've been following for the 20 years before the Trump administration.
Just so people understand, if they have a two-state solution, it means that at one point Israel is 7 miles or maybe 9 miles across. The country could not possibly defend itself from terrorist attacks if they were to go to that. Unfortunately, that kind of an arrangement of a two-state solution. In addition to that, for those of you who've never traveled to Israel, just so you'll know, in Gaza, you got Hamas shooting rockets over at you. To the north and Lebanon, right across the border, there's anywhere from 175,000 to maybe as many as 300,000 sophisticated missiles aimed at Israel to try to kill off the Jews. But the biggie, if that's not bad enough, the really biggie is Iran. Iran is the major existential threat. They would obliterate Israel if they could. Just so you're aware that when many of these Arab Muslims design a map, Israel is not even on it. They won't even show it. And Israel occupies is 1/3 of 1% of the entire Middle East. Let me say that one more time. 1/3 of 1% of the entire Middle East. You'd think the rest of them could get along with 99 2/3%. But no, they want Israel's 1/3 of 1%. And one of these days, God's going to raise his hand and Israel's going to extend from the Nile River to the Euphrates. One of these days, according to the Bible, that day comes.
Josh. Yeah, just to give you an example of what you're saying, the idea of land for peace in a nutshell is the Arab lands of the 22 countries around us is the size of a football field. Okay.
Yes.
Israel is the size of a pack of matches on a football field. And what they're saying, if we cut our pack of matches in half and give it to the Arabs, then we're going to have peace. I mean, the whole thing is absolutely ridiculous, but it's designed to make Israel smaller and smaller so that we couldn't defend our land. And I think that it's a very dangerous thing. And I hope that the Trump administration's support for a strong Israel is something that prevails.
We want you to contact us. We'd love to take you to Israel. We'd love you to meet Josh Reinstein, who we're talking to right now. He's a very, very close friend of ours, and we'd love to take you to Israel. So you can contact us, contact Tiffany at wellversedworld.org or Rosemary. Yeah, let's go direct to you. Rosemary at wellversedworld.org. We'd love to take you up into Samaria. We'd love you to see Judea. If you went to Samaria and Judea, your eyes would open immediately why this is such a critical issue. It's a crisis moment for these areas. Don't get me started, Josh. It'll last two more hours, so I'll stop right there. Rosemary, what do you want to say? And then would you pray for Israel? But say what you want, and then let's pray.
Right now, we're planning to go in 2021 in May. And in October, and it's always a privilege to come to Israel. It's always such an honor to live in this moment in history when we can travel there in less than 24 hours and visit this spectacular land first class. We never take it for granted, and we're very sad this year we're not able to go. So we want to invite you to come in 2021. Please contact us. We'd love to host you and take you into the biblical heartland along the road of the patriarchs to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the land. So we welcome you. Please contact us and learn of ways to support the Jewish people more and more. Pray for their safety. And we want you to join with us in what the Lord is doing at this very strategic, sovereign time. And thank you, Josh. And I'm hoping you make an audiobook of your new publication, because your voice is spectacular. You're very anointed. And we would love to hear as well as read these important words you have to share with us.
You want to pray for Israel right now?
Yes.
And then we're going to tap on.
Father, we pray. We thank you so much for this blessed sanctuary in the heart of the world, at the very pinnacle of all history, that we will be joined with you, with your purposes. Lead and guide us. Give us your wisdom and understanding. Let our nation follow your path in righteousness. And we thank you so much for the leaders you are raising up to do so. We thank you for Joshua Reinstein and his family, that he is a great champion both for the United States and for his people, the Jewish people, and for Israel. Thank you. Protect him. Continue to guard and protect and help give him your heart to express to us what we must do at this time. Amen.
I want to encourage you to go on Amazon right now or wherever you get your books and get Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel. I recommend you pick up a couple copies and pass, make sure you read and start passing them around to your friends as quickly as you can to educate them on these issues. And on our website, wellversedworld.org, go to wellversedworld.org. We've been really upgrading our website with a lot of new information. Go to wellversedworld.org. You can sign up for our newsletter there. Please go and do that exactly now. And then also go to Rosemary, or type in Rosemary at wellversedworld.org. Send her an email, and she will give you information on our upcoming trip to Israel. Josh Reinstein, thank you so much. Blessings upon you, our friend.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please read the show notes for additional details if you would like a copy of the book or resources mentioned. Remember that Well-Versed is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit organization. We rely on your support and partnership.
Thank you for listening to the Well-Versed podcast. For more information, please go to www.wellversedworld.org.